Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric. Atop the milk-packing district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
The White House will not release photos of Bin Laden's body. A train derails and bursts into flames on Highway 30, and a Eugene couple finds a snake in their dishwasher.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed for this. This is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Thursday, May 5th, 2011. A train derailment resulted in a tanker fire just outside Portland yesterday.
A far.
Okay. It was far away. It was outside Portland. It was afar. The accident was located on Highway 30 west of Cornelius Pass at Newberry. The wreck happened at 12:45 p.m. and was escalated to a two-alarm fire just after 1 p.m.
That's about 3 miles from the city?
It was a stretch.
Okay.
A stretch out of town.
A for peace.
It was a for peace.
Yeah.
ODOT said the train wreck possibly involved lumber or logs and an overturned tanker car.
If by possibly involved, do they mean we watched it on the television as we saw that actually happening and those things on fire?
Well, I wanted to make sure I had the account from yesterday before I moved on to the account for today.
Okay.
So I'm now reading the stuff from yesterday. The wreckage was controlled and extinguished by 4 p.m. yesterday, and roads were open, and residents who were forced to leave their homes were allowed to return the early evening on Wednesday. The National Transportation Safety Board, the Portland Fire Bureau, and train owners Genesee and Wyoming will be focusing on the train wreck to investigate how it derailed and the possible spills of ethanol into the Multnomah Channel. The EPA and the Coast Guard will be checking into reports of a sheen on the Multnomah Channel on the Columbia River. Probably not Charlie Sheen.
See, why do you have to do that?
Because, you know, you were thinking it.
Here's the problem. The problem with you making that joke now, it's just like every jag-off in the world thinks that he's funny because he thought the same thing. Mm. He was all, I wonder if it's Charlie Sheen. And then you, Don Taylor, broadcast professional and comedian-tress, say, well, it's Charlie Sheen. And then that guy goes, well, look at that. I am funny.
That was a good joke.
I sound just like Don Taylor. I'm going to go force my wit upon an unsuspecting public at an open mic night.
Oh, boys and girls, do not use me as a bar against which to measure yourself. Never, never do that. Multiple crews from the Portland Fire Bureau, Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue, and Scappoose Fire Department were dispatched, but were later pulled back after the possibility of an explosion from nearby tankers, which were holding 20,000 gallons of ethanol.
Yeah.
As we mentioned yesterday on the Rick Emerson show, maybe having 20,000 gallons of ethanol and a bunch of firewood on the same train, not necessarily a good idea.
I know we're nitpicking there, but I mean, it really does seem like it seems ill-advised.
Crews from St. John Station 22 were the first to arrive. Division chief of Portland Fire and Rescue said, had it not been for their decisive actions and quick deployment of turrets and aerial streams to cool down the tankers, before having to withdraw because of imminent danger. This incident could have ended quite differently. The train's owner said that a train with 59 lumber cars was traveling westbound when it derailed. The derailed trains hit a group of 20 stationary tanker cars on a sidetrack, including 13 ethanol tanker cars.
So
they weren't all on the same train. A wood train hit an ethanol train.
This is just like the Great American Traffic Jam, where the semi that's hauling oranges hits the semi that's hauling vodka.
It is. It's exactly like that, except fierier.
And it doesn't have Howard Hessman. It's DJ Senor Smooth.
Yeah. So the tanker cars were owned by Genesee & Wyoming, the parent company of Portland and Western Railroad.
By the way, I'd like to thank our good friend Siegfried, who is giving us constant updates from his houseboat in Scappoose, where he was, I think, insulated from any and all dangers and was just sitting out there just having a gin and tonic and watching it all burn. It's a good day to be alive. you are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Hold on a second. There we go.
Whoa. What the?
I got a cough button, but why? You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Thursday, May 5th. That is Thursday, Cinco de Mayo, 2011.
Hey!
Please don't do that.
Okay.
Are you doing Xena?
I don't know. I was trying to do Happy Mexican People.
Happy Mexican? Have they been set on fire?
No, that's IE. That's okay. Completely different.
Okay. Anywho, if you want to get this program later on the day, you can do it via iTunes. There's a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. It's also available on your mobile device. You can take it with you at mobile.cascadia.fm. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. And then the Rick Emerson Show comes up next hour at rickemersonshow.com for the low, low cost of just 32 cents a day. That is rickemersonshow.com about an hour or so from now. Here is Don Taylor.
President Obama says he won't release photos of Osama bin Laden's corpse. Democratic Senator Claire McCaskill agrees with Obama's decision, saying it could incite more violence.
This would be a...
Now, wait a minute. Hold on. This is who's... So Obama won't, and then Claire McCaskill, who is who?
She's a Democratic senator. And she says, good for you, Obama.
And we're not going to release the photo. Why?
Because if we did, it could incite more violence.
Now, I thought Islam was a religion of peace, Don. I didn't think that they could be incited to violence.
I thought that since we actually got the bad guy, everything was all better now.
Well, it seems like you can't have it both ways, though. I mean, you can either claim that the irrationality of certain cultures is blown out of proportion, or you can say that we can't actually show a photograph because they'll all go nuts. I mean, it's like it's one or the other.
Well, again,
you can either show Muhammad or you can't.
I think, though, again, the problem is not all Muslim people. It's the crazy radical Muslim people.
Well, I think that rationale hasn't stopped us from leaving everything else out there that could potentially incite people.
No.
I mean, can you think of anything else that's been taken off the market by the government because it might potentially drive crazy people to violence? Seriously.
I'm sure there's... I don't know.
You can't think of anything. No, not, neither can anybody else. You can't even believe you're trying to think of something. I'm just saying, it does seem like that gives lie to their claim that they don't believe that there's a vast amount of danger out there. I'm not saying that's the case. I'm just saying the government's actions indicate that they do not even believe their own rhetoric about, what do you mean? What do you think? Saudi Arabia is full of crazy religious zealots. Come on. What are you talking about? I'm sorry. So what? This is Bin Laden 1?
Yes.
This would be a recruiting tool. This would be used among terrorist cells all across the world to try to play on people's emotions and their anti-West, their anti-American sentiments.
I'll put it this way. I would imagine that there's a greater number of people that have had bonker-like behavior associated with Catcher in the Rye than with a picture of Osama bin Laden. The government has not taken Catcher in the Rye off the market.
Yeah.
What is the difference?
Yeah. I don't disagree that the photograph of bin Laden's body might be used as part of their tools and their propaganda to recruit people. But I'm not sure that, you know, it's really going to do more to make people anti-Western Western government. What? I mean, it's like if they're again the U.S. already, I don't think, like, you know, seeing a picture of a dead guy is really going to be the tipping point.
Yeah, who knows?
Ms. Caskill says releasing the photos would serve no meaningful purpose.
Why would we give the terrorists a recruiting tool if we don't need to? And I think that is a much stronger argument than people's curiosity that they want to see the pictures.
I don't understand the phrase recruiting tool, though, because there seems to be two different rationales. Maybe they're the same and they're being given different names, or maybe they're two different things. The two rationales seem to be, one, it's going to be a recruiting tool.
Mm-hmm.
And then The second is going to be that it will inflame, and this is a phrase that I hear. This is not my phrase, but yeah. It will inflame the Muslim world. Now, are those the same thing, or are those two different things?
Those might be two different things. I mean, speaking as a Muslim, I would imagine that it could be seen as offensive and as flaunting, and as tasteless. If we did that, I could see regular mainstream Muslims finding that really tasteless and inappropriate. On the other hand, though, the whole recruiting tool, but I don't know if that would inflame anyone.
I'm just saying, like, all I ever ask in this world, that's not really true. There's a lot of things I ask for.
You ask
but
for you, a lot.
But here's the thing. Some of them I get, like those 29-cent tacos they have at Del Taco today.
Yeah, where are those?
Were you here yesterday?
You said you were bringing tacos.
2 p.m. is when that starts.
Oh.
2 p.m. Let's just all ratchet down our 29-cent taco expectations to a realistic level, shall we?
I missed the 2 p.m. part. I thought it was all day. It's Cinco de Mayo all day.
No. My only question is, really, one of the overriding things that I ask for in this fading republic of ours is just some logical consistency. And for the government to just say something that is at least within shouting distance of what they actually mean.
Oh, that's just crazy to want that.
Because now...
What country do you live in?
Because the obligatory observation has now been made in the text box that it's not Islam, it's violent extremist, terrorist does not equal Muslim. Which
right.
I don't think I said, and I don't think anybody said. I guess my thing is, it's not like they didn't put the picture of JFK out there because they were afraid that postal clerks everywhere would go nuts.
Yeah.
You know? Because obviously that is, because that doesn't make any sense. It just seems like if you look at the government's actions, the government indicates that they believe that the Muslim world will just go indiscriminately crazier if they were to be shown a picture of Osama bin Laden. It seems like you either think that they're just a bunch of violent children or you don't. If you don't, it doesn't really matter. I mean, show it, don't show. But the idea that it's going to incite further violence, that only holds any sort of logical water if you believe that they're predisposed to that or that a large section of them are predisposed to that. Because if it's just a handful of nuts, guess what? They don't need a reason. So I'm just saying. It's,
well, on the other hand, though, you have to admit, though, that them coming out with this as their statement, though, not only serves the purpose of giving them an excuse to not show us the picture, which it's probably just like, why bother? Why do it? While at the same time helping to reinforce the idea that there are a lot of people out there that we still need to be afraid of. Because the government is very heavily invested in us, being scared of Muslims.
Now, see, I would think that it would actually work the other way around, though. I would think if the government said, we're going to show you the bin Laden picture tonight, and then they just rolled it out on television for everybody. I think that would be, when we talk about a recruiting tool, I think that would be a recruiting tool for the United States government, because I don't think there's anything that would further convince certain sections of the country that we just need to pour 90% of our revenue into the military budget than by saying, hey, look at this. How'd you like 10 more of these with 10 other bad guys from around the world? We're going to go kick in doors left and right. Just say the word, and we'll go. And the American people, if they saw that and it was put in front of them in that visceral fashion, would be even more inclined to support a large military expenditure on their behalf. It seems like it would work well for the U.S. government.
You would think so. I don't. I imagine that there's a think tank somewhere where a bunch of guys sat around in a room and experts and sociologists and whatnot figured out that there's a danger that now that bin Laden has been killed, that a lot of people will go, well, I guess the war on terror is over now. Because people are idiots. But instead, if they say, oh, we can't show you the picture because there's still a whole lot of scary people out there and they'll go crazy and they'll bomb us some more, then we'll go, okay, then keep that Homeland Security on high alert.
See, and that everything you just said, though, is true. Everything you absolutely said is true except for the phrase, they'll go crazy. Because by definition...
It doesn't have to be true.
I'm saying all the stuff the government says about all the stuff that you were just saying the government says to keep us in a state of fear all actually has the added benefit of being true. There's a lot of crazy, violent nutcases in the world. Many of them probably in our own streets, Dawn.
We are on Southeast Division. I mean,
it's just odd. It just seems like the government is looking for... is looking for reasons not to do something that I think would probably benefit. And somebody says, replace the word Muslim with terrorist. They believe terrorists will go nuts, not Muslims. But I think if you're a terrorist, it seems like by definition, you are already past. You've already made up your mind. If one is actually in the category of terrorist, the switch has already been flipped. It's not like you're on the fence. I think terrorist implies that you've gone past the area of mental prevarication in terms of your behavior. I'm just asking for linguistic consistency.
Oh, well,
not going to get any.
I think that's a lot to ask from governmental entities.
Stupid world. Why do I? And then in the meantime, everybody just sends me. Here's what I got like 7 times last night. People are like, "Hey, Bin Laden death photo." And of course, I'm the average American idiot. Sure, click. And then it's always just a picture of Chris Farley. Mm. It's just a picture of Chris Farley just dead, covered in Cheetos.
I got posting to my wall on Facebook like that was ostensibly some kind of Bin Laden death video or something, and I knew that it had to be some kind of a hack job because it was sent by like an old editor of mine at the Tribune who never uses Facebook anymore. So I was just like, okay, somebody just like,
yeah,
you know, got into something and sent this because I'm not opening this. Not only do I not care what it is, but it could be something. Anyway, let's move on, shall we? Michael Fitch and his wife had just returned to their Eugene, Oregon home at the end of, actually, he had just returned at the end of his work day. And his wife called him into the kitchen saying, "Honey, I need you." And there was a snake halfway out of the family's dishwasher vent.
Excellent. Where was this at?
Eugene,
wonderful.
Oregon. Not fond of snakes, Fitch said he suited up with gloves, tongs, and a lunchbox and grabbed hold of the snake. And his wife got a camera and apparently took a picture of it. He said the snake put up a fight before he managed to tug it free and release it outside. Eugene TV network, what channel? That's the that's the word I'm looking for. KVAL-TV in
Just
Eugene.
Let's back up and get another run at that.
Yes, KVAL-TV in Eugene showed photos of the Monday night encounter to Yusef Oyeda, a PhD candidate in herpetology at OSU. He conceded the snake in a dishwasher might be a little unusual, but he said it was a harmless Western garter snake.
Okay.
Still, the guy who lives there says he's taking extra care now when he opens his dishwasher.
Well, because, you know, garter snake, smarter snake, that's probably not a thing that, first of all, that's like, I don't know that I or anybody else would be able to make that distinction. And even if I was, I don't really know that I would trust my own distinction-making abilities in that regard.
You know, I get kind of freaked out when I just suddenly see, like, a giant spider where a spider's not supposed to be, like on my bathroom wall.
Well, and I don't
trust... And so a snake anywhere in my house,
Because you're not like an arachnologist or whatever it is.
No.
So you go like, well, it's probably harmless, but maybe not. You know, one just never knows.
Well, it's also that thing of some things are just naturally scary to our prehistoric lizard brain, like snakes and spiders and stuff. And you go in to take a shower or what have you, and you go into the bathroom, you're la, 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 and you turn around, and like right at eye level, there's like a huge spider.
Hi.
Yeah, it doesn't even matter if you're really not afraid of spiders. Your first reaction is just, ah!
Oh, it's a thing.
Yeah.
You know why? It's because I have this theory about this. The reason you're afraid of spiders and not, like, you know, like lobsters is because the spider is small enough to get inside your body.
Mm.
You know, lobster, you don't really want to hang it out in your house all the time, but you don't see it and go like, oh, I got to run away, you know. But
I would be very freaked out if I walked into my kitchen and there was a lobster.
That's because there'd be a,
snapping its snappy things at me.
Because it'd be a nude, bloody man eating it while sitting on a chair. But you see a spider and you go like, that's a thing that could, you know, that's a thing that could lay its young inside my brain
inside
while
my
I
clothes.
Sleep.
Seriously.
A Michigan man accused of fatally stabbing his mother after she refused to give him money for drugs is expected to claim temporary insanity due to low sodium at his murder trial.
He should totally complain. He should just totally claim that he was going through some sort of violent withdrawal and it put him into a mental state. That seems like a much more medically supportable defense.
Yeah. His court-appointed lawyer said Tuesday that 38-year-old Charles Faresi experienced brain dysfunction because he suffered from hyponatremia, a lack of salt in bodily fluids outside the cells, and he wasn't being treated properly. He stabbed his 62-year-old mother to death in their Roseville home. Her body was found the next day with 43 stab wounds.
That seems like overstab.
A little overstab, and really, because of low salt.
I don't understand
really?
This. This is a question, but I don't know if it's a non sequitur or not. Also, there's no no question mark at the end of it. But it says, is this beginning of a joke? Why is the Pope behind 3 inches of glass? It was like 3 minutes, and I keep waiting. I keep wanting to go, I don't know. Why is the Pope behind 3 inches of glass? And then if there's going to be something amusing at the end about a nudie booth.
Is he trying to make some kind of point about terrorists?
I don't know. I was wondering if it made sense to you.
No.
Maybe I'm just obtuse. No. Or thick.
Yeah. Like the glass.
I'm a dullard.
That's around the Pope.
Yes. I've spent all my time practicing my my spider voice.
What is your spider voice?
Hi.
Oh, yeah, that's it. It's like a spider's right here in the room with us. I can't believe you don't get cast on TV more often.
You close your eyes, it's like you're in the depths of the Amazon.
See, if those guys on Leverage would try to cast you as a spider instead of an international, like, man of mystery or whatever it was you've been auditioning for.
I'm going to put that down on my, like on your resume or your
special
whatever.
Special skills, spider voice.
Totally. I'm going to, that's exactly what I'm going to put. Spider voice is going to be my new accent in which I specialize.
In a 251-175 vote last night, 16 Democrats joined every House Republican present in passing H.R. 3, the No Taxpayer Funding for Abortion Act.
H.R. 3?
H.R. 3.
I thought we were up to like 752,000.
Yeah, maybe this one's just been around for a while. I have no idea.
It's like an old one they found in a drawer somewhere.
A chief weapon in the House GOP's comprehensive assault on women. That's a quote unquote. I don't know who called it a comprehensive assault. It was in quotation
marks. The Ike Turner bill.
This bill proposes some of the most radical and draconian restrictions on women's rights. One of the first and the biggest is it actually redefines rape. The bill is sponsored by Representative Chris Smith, a Republican from New Jersey, and he faced serious backlash after he tried to narrow the definition of rape to forcible rape. By narrowing the rape and incest exception in the Hyde Amendment, Smith sought to prevent the following situations from consideration. He wanted to remove...
I don't understand what forcible rape is as opposed to regular rape.
Well, that's... Yeah, I know. That's the thing. He tried to actually narrow the definition to... forcible rape.
Right, but I'm asking.
Okay, here he.
What is the other kind?
It would disallow women who say no but do not physically fight off the perpetrator, women who are drugged or verbally threatened and raped, and minors impregnated by adults.
So if you drug a woman, that doesn't count as force?
That's what this guy is saying.
That's interesting.
Also, if a woman says no but does not actually physically fight back, if the woman just actually is like in fear for her life and doesn't like strike out or something, then that would not be forcible rape either. He promised to remove the language, and while it's not technically in the bill, it's been reported that House Republicans used, quote, a sly legislative maneuver, that's in the words of Mother Jones magazine, to insert a backdoor reintroduction of redefinition language. Essentially, if the bill is challenged in court, judges will look at the congressional committee report to determine intent. The committee report for H.R. 3 says the bill will not allow the federal government to subsidize abortions in cases of statutory rape, thus excluding statutory rape-related abortions from Medicaid coverage. It also includes a tax increase on women and small businesses, preventing women from using itemized medical deductions, certain tax-advantaged health care accounts or tax credits. It also bans using tax credits or deductions to pay for abortions or insurance, which would cause problems when people are trying to get help after rape.
Is this increases taxes on women and small businesses or women in small businesses?
Women and small businesses.
Oh, okay. They would have
to provide health insurance that covers abortion to pay more in taxes than they would otherwise. So if you cover abortion with your health insurance, you'd have to pay an extra tax.
That's really the only reason you took this job.
Yes, because I'm hoping that, because my many abortions need to be covered by someone.
I just poured water on myself.
Oh, okay. Don't do that. And it also would ban abortions in the District of Columbia by redefining the local government as the federal government. Thus, health clinics in Washington, D.C. would be banned from using public funds from D.C. taxpayers to provide services. So despite receiving nearly 135,000 signatures in opposition to the bill, Speaker John Boehner and the House Republicans, approved it. So President Obama has threatened to veto the bill.
Well, he probably will. I mean, I think it's one of those. I believe that is what they call a legislative show of force. Mm. That is a. I think that is. And plus, here's the other thing. Then it works as not to make everything a recruiting tool today, but then they can. But then once Obama vetoes it, you know, they can't override the veto, which they won't be able to. Then those guys, Boehner and his band of merry men, they can then go back to their constituent and say, "Well, look, see here, we tried," and then they can hold up, you know, right. the legislature. Then they can say, "But then godless liberals, blah blah yeah. blah blah blah."
And then next year, when Obama runs again, they can say he's pro-abortion because you know. So John Boehner. Speaking of John Boehner, he says he's optimistic about new deficit reduction talks being led by Vice President Biden. Boehner reaffirmed his position on raising the debt limit.
As I've said, and will continue to say, we will not increase the debt limit.
Somebody turn off your phone,
without
please.
Without real spending
cuts. Maybe he had his own theme
and
music.
Budget reform.
The Charles in Charge theme plays in his pocket whenever he addresses the.
We'll continue to say, we will not increase the debt
Boehner.
Limit without real spending cuts. And budget reform.
He's John Boehner. Wow.
I wish that Boehner was in charge of me. Boehner says there is one non-starter for Republicans in these negotiations.
Let me make this clear. When it comes to increasing the debt limit and the need to have reductions in spending, nothing is off the table except raising taxes.
Okay.
Well, okay then.
I have no response.
No.
You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. The Rick Emerson Show next hour at rickemersonshow.com. Today, on the board, it just says, penis clown Nazi. So, which is the worst kind of Nazi? You know, there's regular Nazis.
The penis clown
and
Nazis.
And then there's penis clown Nazis.
They were a special division of the SS.
Yeah, but they just... I'm trying to see now that I've got the spider voice down pat, I'm trying to figure out what a penis clown Nazi would sound like. And sort of a... Wait, I don't have a clown horn. Here's what it was in my head just now. If I had the appropriate sound effect, let's see if I can.
Well, we do have the clown music. You could play that.
Let's see if I've got the sound. If I've got the sound within like 5 seconds of being playable. Wait, okay, so this only works if you imagine him then covered in penises, as we often are. the penis clown Nazi would just be sort of a. He'd come out and go, oh, oh, jawohl. But then penises.
Then penises, yes.
Or like an angry yovel, perhaps, or, you know.
Mm-hmm. So I was just thinking
and he shakes
sort
his fist
fabulous.
On a balcony somewhere.
I was kind of thinking of like Byron Beck in clown makeup and an SS uniform.
I certainly won't excerpt that phrase out and send it to him. I was thinking of Byron Beck in clown makeup and an SS uniform. All right, here's Dawn Taylor.
Let's do our science news.
Mm-hmm. Is there anyone we haven't offended so far?
Today or just in general?
No, I mean in the last, like, 26 minutes.
Mm. We haven't said anything about Groupon in a few days.
Okay. Well, show's not over. All right. Here's your Science on the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. Well, I guess they're up. Squires Electric, 503-252-1609 or squireselectric.com. That is squireselectric.com. You can also go to facebook.com/squireselectric. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. That means that your home or business or some confluence of the two, if you're working at home, if you're going to be expanding your business, you're going to be remodeling your house, you're going to be knocking on a wall, putting in a room, putting on a wing, putting in a garage, or if you're just going to be going from one facility for your business to two to 4 to 5 to 12 to whatever. You want to make sure it's done right the first time. That is what you want to do. So you contact Squires Electric at 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. Squires Electric, proud sponsors of this Science on March.
Fences and railway lines in Mongolia are cutting endangered wild asses off from their habitat, pushing the animals towards extinction, according to a new study. Wild asses...
I'm sorry, But enough about Timmy Ryan.
Wild asses, which are related to donkeys, once ranged across Mongolia, Russia, and into the Middle East. Today, they're found only in small pockets in these areas, with the largest group living in the Gobi Desert. Despite protected areas set aside for wildlife in Mongolia, the asses are in trouble, researchers reported in February in the journal Biological Conservation. Both man-made and natural barriers keep the asses separated from one another and cut off from their migratory routes, a fact that was illustrated by one wild ass observed walking almost 40 miles alongside a railroad fence.
Do you have like a whole like a stack of titmouse stories you're going to do after this?
I wish.
Yes.
Researchers knew the wild asses faced challenges in their Gobi Desert habitat. Local ranchers see the asses as competition for their livestock, so they chase away or illegally kill the animals. The International Union for Conservation of Nature lists Asiatic wild asses as endangered. So while the asses' genetic diversity is heartening, the other news isn't as good. Humans have restricted the wild asses' habitat and food supply, especially in the Gobi, where protected areas aren't enough to support the asses with grass and water. So saving the wild asses will be a matter of international cooperation, the researchers wrote. Wildlife crossing points should be built over or under railroad tracks, and the border between Mongolia and China should be declared an ecological corridor with fence openings for asses to migrate.
Okay.
Praying and believing in God might secure a healthier existence for your soul in the hereafter, but it doesn't necessarily do much for the body in this life, a new study shows. Religiosity appears to have little effect on preventing hypertension or high blood pressure,
said Don King.
And those study participants proclaiming to be the most religious were actually the most likely to have high blood pressure. The study was conducted by medical students at the Loyola University Chicago Stritch School of Medicine and presented at a meeting of the Society of Teachers of Family Medicine in New Orleans. Many studies indeed have shown that those who attend weekly religious services or participate in church activities have at least marginally better health than non-participants, yet these studies have focused primarily on physical participation, getting out of the house on a weekly service and being part of a community. They did find, though, that in this study, that whether or not a person merely attends church, but whether they carry their religion over into all their other dealings in their life, has a difference on their blood pressure. Those who were the most religious in this regard were the least healthy in terms of high blood pressure.
Well, yeah, because you're just sitting around being angry at every single thing you see.
Yes.
I mean, really, that's, yeah, I would imagine that you're just walking around apoplectic like 23 hours a day.
Yeah, also there was also another study in 2009 in social science medicine that looked at 3,000 adults and found prayer and spirituality were associated with higher blood pressure. And offered no benefit for preventing hypertension for 1,600 women in a different study that was published in the Annals of Behavioral Medicine. So,
which you think would be fine. I mean, you know, higher blood pressure, more hypertension, the sooner one gets to go sit at the hand of God.
Exactly. Almost 50 million years ago, ants the size of hummingbirds roamed what is now in Wyoming.
Don't read this story. Why do you have to do that? Why do you got to hate?
Well, they're not. They don't exist now.
Oh, sure they don't. You watch sci-fi. They exist.
The giant bugs may have crossed an Arctic land bridge between Europe and North America during a particularly warm period in Earth's history. I'm actually dropping a picture of the giant ant into the Dropbox.
That's
for
great.
You now.
I need something to delete without.
Well, not really
at it.
The giant ant. It's the giant ant fossil that they found, and it's next to a hummingbird, so you can see how
big
it is.
Seriously, I wish you were dead.
At about 2 inches long, the specimen is a monstrously big ant, said Bruce Archibald, a paleoentomologist at Simon Fraser University in British Columbia, who reported the discovery today, actually, okay, 2 days ago, May 3rd, in the journal Proceedings of the Royal Society B. Though fossils of loose giant ant wings may have been found before in the United States, this is the first known full body specimen. The fossil ant is from a well-known fossil site in Wyoming called the Green River Formation, but it has been sitting in a drawer in the Denver Museum of Nature and Science. When a curator showed him the fossil, Archibald said, he knew he was looking at something exciting.
What do you mean it's been sitting in a drawer? Why would you find a giant ant and then not tell somebody about it?
I don't know. Archibald said, I immediately recognized it and said, oh my God, this is a giant ant. And it looks like it's related to giant ants that are known from this time in Germany.
Amber Waves, entomologist.
So there you go.
Okay.
Monstrously big ant fossil.
Is this the photo called Giant Ant?
That would be it, yes.
Okay, just check. Why do you have to? Oh, I hate you.
It's a fossil. It's not the actual ant. I'm glad there aren't ants that big now.
You know, none of the clowns you read about are actually in the room with us here.
Right.
But I mean, I just, you know, because here's the thing: everything they think is still alive is dead, and everything they think is extinct is actually still out there. So that just means that I'm going to go home one of these days, and he's just going to be sitting in my shower, just, you know.
An ant the size of a chihuahua.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, I don't,
Well, we will upload this photo listener can.
I hate Don Taylor. You can go to rickemerson.com/pictures. rickemerson.com/pictures, and that is visual aids for May 5th. That is rickemerson.com/pictures, visual aids May 5th.
Monstrously big ants.
Yes.
More than 600 people marked the exact moment when the first American rocketed into space 50 years ago. Today's ceremony took place at the spot where Mercury astronaut Alan Shepard blasted off in a 15-minute suborbital flight on May 5th, 1961. The crowd at Cape Canaveral Air Force Station included Shepard's three daughters, about 100 Project Mercury workers, and one of the two surviving Mercury 7 astronauts, Scott Carpenter. They listened to a recording of Shepard's journey, timed to the second of his launch at 9:34 a.m. Shepard was the second man in space. Soviet cosmonaut Yuri Gagarin beat him into space by less than a month. Shepard later became the fifth man to walk on the moon. He died in 1998 at age 74.
Hey, totally unrelated to this. Did you see that story that came out about a month ago about, and I forget his name, who's one of the follow-up cosmonauts? He was a friend of Yuri Gagarin's. And, you know, Gagarin, of course, was the first man to orbit, orbit the Earth. And it was a friend of Gagarin's who they were talking about had gone up and had gone because he knew that if he didn't go, they were going to send Gagarin. He also, though, knew that the spacecraft they were sending him up in, that the Soviets were sending him up in, was dangerously flawed and would almost certainly result in his death. But he didn't want his good friend Yuri Gagarin, who he viewed as a great man and a national hero, to go into space, so he insisted on going in Gagarin's place. And they just, it's one of those things where they, like, just declassified, like, a whole pile of stuff they found, like, in the Kremlin or whatever. And it's the greatest, the most inspiring yet ultimately just horrific and sad story, because the guy basically knew that, that they were just shooting him up there in, like, a coffee can. And but the only alternative, if he bowed out, they would have sent Gagarin. And he's like, oh, I'm not going to let that happen. So they put him in this thing and they shoot him into space. And sure enough, there's like the heat panel or whatever which is a bad way to go. But the heat panel is not affixed properly. And there are these apparently very unsettling recordings of him sort of re-entering the atmosphere. And so he dies. And, so that's the bad news, is that, yeah, sure, burned to a crisp. It is accompanied by this morbidly hilarious photo, though, of his remains being saluted by, like, the heads of the Soviet Politburo, where they're going, and you, cosmonaut Ikskelek, and it literally is just like a pile of coffee grounds. So he re-enters the Earth, and sure enough, as he suspected, the heat shield was insufficient. He burns up, but in a great sort of oddly Soviet act of defiance at the end, he just spent like his last 15 seconds alive just screaming at the scientists and the government who'd sent him up there and just calling them bastards.
Well, good.
She's like, F you! It's really hot in here! I hope you die! It's a fascinating and really inspiring, if very, very sad story. Aww. About Yuri Gagarin and this other cosmonaut whose name escapes me, I'll find it and I'll post it. It's quite something to read.
That's all of the science.
All right, there you go. There's your Science on the March. Brought to you by Squires Electric. Don't let the Soviet Union install your wiring or heat paneling. Have Joe Squires and his band of folks do that for you. That is 503-252-1609 or SquiresElectric.com or Facebook.com/SquiresElectric. So there you go. That is your Science on the March. Somewhere he's sitting at a table playing poker with Laika. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Here's Don Taylor.
Oregon Army National Guard helicopter crews pulled two hikers stranded on a ledge overnight to safety near Joaquina Falls Trail in the Columbia Gorge. The two were pulled to safety by a helicopter crew just before 2 p.m. and were evaluated by medics. The men had a cell phone and had communicated Wednesday morning with search and rescue crews headed their way. One of the men tumbled about 30 feet off of a trail. When the other tried to help, both ended up stranded. By 7 a.m., the hikers could hear the whistles of searches and hear the a helicopter. Portland Mountain Rescue's Steve Rollins said the terrain was steep and dangerous and rope rescue was needed to get them. A PMR team headed out, but it was later determined a helicopter crew would be a better method of extraction. Let's call this happy dog news. I have good dog news.
All right. Would you like to hear a suggestion about, never mind.
Oh, come on. What?
We were talking about the penis clown Nazi, and then it was suggested that I Rick Emerson, could play the part of a spider Nazi. Heil. See.
Yeah.
Not funny.
No, not really.
I'm sorry. What are we doing?
We're doing a happy dog story.
All right. Here you go. Here's your happy animal news for Thursday here at Legion of News. Oh, I'm sorry. Totally. That's wrong.
What the hell?
I mean, happy being relative.
It's funky animal news.
Because it's like animals in the military. A fearless four-legged recruit joined U.S. Special Forces as they stormed Osama bin Laden's secret lair. The explosive-sniffing dog was strapped to an assault team member as they took on one of their greatest challenges to date. He was part of the operation in which the elite U.S. Navy SEALs lowered themselves down ropes from three Black Hawk helicopters into the terrorist Supremo's hideout in the town of Abbottabad, Pakistan, on Sunday. Bin Laden was shot dead by a Special Forces marksman during the raid. Heavily armored dogs equipped with infrared night sight cameras have been used in the past by the top secret unit. The war dogs wear ballistic body armor that is said to withstand damage from single and double-edged knives, as well as protective gear which shields them from shrapnel and gunfire.
These are actual literal dogs of war.
Yes, these are actual literal dogs of war.
Awesome.
German shepherds have been leading the way in SAS raids in Iraq and Afghanistan. Wearing oxygen masks, the dogs have been trained to jump from aircraft at 25,000 feet before seeking out insurgents in hostile environments. The animals will attack anyone carrying a weapon and have become a pivotal part of special operations as they crawl unnoticed into tunnels or rooms to hunt for enemy combatants.
I'd like to think the last thing that went through his head was the idea that he had been beaten by a dog.
Yes.
Something a brain the size of a kidney bean actually was his undoing. That would be awesome.
And in addition to the night sight goggles that the armored dogs wear, they also have cameras on their heads that beam live TV pictures back to the troops that provides them with information and warns them of ambushes.
Fantastic. I will just say this. It is...
Brave Navy SEAL dogs.
As everything, as everything in that situation resolves, I will just say that... never mind. I was going to take this whole down a whole different conversational side road, but we don't have time. It's like... It's already 12:40 on Thursday, May 5th, 2011. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. We just realized how dangerously off track we've already gotten today. It is Thursday, though, so, you know, it's...
That day.
Thursday is the day we get ready for Friday, but it's also the day that everything sort of goes far afield of its intended area of discussion.
Let's get a little wacky on Thursday.
Let's see. Coming up next hour on the Rick Emerson Show, Penis Clown Nazi. I'm just
Sig
saying...
Sig Heil, people! Sig Heil!
Without any explanation at all. Penis Watch... Shouldn't do that. Penis Watch, Clown Watch, Nazi Watch, and recap of last night's season finale of Justified. So last night on FX, the season finale of Justified, episode 13, season 2. We'll talk about that. And it's all next hour at RickEmersonShow.com, or you, yes, you, can be entertained for the low, low cost of just 32 cents a day. That is at RickEmersonShow.com. Here is Don Taylor.
Everyone into the tiny Volkswagen. That's
Now, who is everyone in this in this joke? Okay.
Right. Nazi clowns.
Okay, so it's clowns. You're...
Yeah, anyway.
I think when Nazis say everybody into the mode of transportation, that ends badly, I think.
President Obama visited a New York City firehouse today that lost 15 members in the collapse of the World Trade Center on September 11th. Firefighter Paul Saravello said the president had lunch with the crew there, and it was, quote, like hanging out with the rest of the guys.
He loved the shrimp. He loved the veal. The eggplant parmesan. He was a really down-to-earth guy.
Veal? They're having veal at the fire station?
Being a firefighter in New York is awesome.
Wow.
Saravello... Just picture those guys eating out of a trough. I mean, just picture firefighters. They're just like a big plate of generic amorphous grub. That's what you picture, like your average, rough and tumble firefighter eating.
I will say, my father was a firefighter. He was a fireman, and actually, they ate pretty good. They would take turns.
I guess they would have to.
They would take turns making dinner, and it became kind of almost like sort of a
deal. Well, it's like a thing to fight off the boredom,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and so everybody would he would come home sometimes and go, one of the guys made this like incredible thing where he like stuffed spinach inside a lamb, and it's got all this garlic, and I want to make it here. And my dad would make it just to see if he could make it. And we'd go, wow, why can't we eat like this all the time? And my dad would say, because I only cook as a hobby. Your mom has to make the food because she's the woman.
And also, of course. And also because, you know, I guess, yeah, if your job consists of long stretches of just mind-numbing tedium interspersed with moments of, oh, my God, I'm going to die, it seems like you probably, you find something to take your mind off of things.
And there's usually, like, one guy who makes, like, awesome chili and somebody else who makes, like, really great spaghetti sauce. And they take turns. And usually, I guess, the food's actually pretty good.
And the thing is, I will say this, as much as... I don't know. I, I, I've said that this doesn't really seem like this should be a statement that causes any sort of controversy or controversy, as our British friends say. But as much as George W. Bush always struck me as being a decent guy. In other words, he never seemed like a bad person to me as such. Like, if you were just to hang out with him, like, I don't think you want to hang out with Dick Cheney, you know? But I think, I'm not saying he was a good president, and I'm not saying that he wasn't manipulated by people around him, and I'm not saying that he ideologically were on the same page, but I'm just saying you would hear those people meet George W. Bush, and they would say, well, you know, he just seemed like a normal guy, like, well, you know, which is very important in American politics. And with him, I guess my point is that with certain presidents or politicians, you feel like that's a put on when they're doing the whole man of the people thing. Like, there's certain presidents, you just look at them and they go, like, you're not really a man of the people, Grover Cleveland. That's a bit of an actor putting on there. Also, you've got a big rubber plug in the roof of your mouth. What's up with that? But with
I don't believe we have anything in common, Taft.
Exactly. But with George W. Bush, I always felt like when he would just sort of talk to guys as just like a plain-spoken guy talking just another guy trying to make his way in this crazy world, I always felt like it was a legitimate, like he was being very sincere. He kind of was that guy. And you understand sort of why people gravitate to politicians who are that way. I don't doubt for a second that that's the case with Obama either, which is, you know, he does seem very much, because again, with some people you feel like it's sort of a shill, like it's a thing they're putting on. But Obama does seem very much like a guy that you could, rub elbows with down at Clancy's when you're getting a snort after work.
He seems like someone you would meet and you would hang out with in some social sort of situation. You would walk away and you would say, wow, he's a really nice man.
Do you know what Obama seems like? You know, here's what Barack and Michelle Obama seem like. And I think a lot of people, especially what they call young marrieds, have this dynamic where it is like the not much older, but the slightly older married couple that you look at and you go, we should be just like that, you know, where it's like they're enough like you that you think you probably have a chance of being that way. But they're far enough ahead of you, like on the sociological advancement scale, that you go, like, it gives you something to aim for. Lauren and I, there's this a sales guy that I used to work with at Intercom, a guy named Mark Forbis. So if anybody out there knows Mark Forbis, and I think we've told him this actually, that Mark and his wife, they were. Lauren and I had gone over to their house to play poker one night, and they were just really, really great. And we totally hit it on. We went over, I think, 2, 3, 4 more times over the course of that year, and just would have dinner, hang out, or whatever. And every single time, we're like, we should totally be just like them. Let's use them as our blueprint. So then we just started, like, single white femaling ourselves just after Mark and his wife, Kim. And now
they don't want to see you anymore, do they?
Yes. And now we can't actually go within a mile and a half of them at any given time. So it's all very unfortunate.
At the hanging out with the rest of the guys dinner, Saravella said he and his colleagues expressed their gratitude for the operation that killed Osama bin Laden.
We just wanted to tell him we thank him for what he did on Sunday and all the troops and all. We want to let them know that we're with them.
Well, seriously, think of it. It's the greatest favor. He actually just had one of your enemies killed for you.
Yeah.
I mean, I ask for that all the time, and nobody ever does it. Mm. I often say to people, you know, if somebody does me a kindness, as Jack Rebney would say, or if I am in their debt, I'll say, well, you know, let me know if I can ever help you out. Or I'll sometimes, one of my sort of pat, you know, zany responses, like, you know, now I owe you bone marrow or whatever. Or, you know, I will occasionally, not that often, I will offer to have one of your enemies tortured and then dispatched. But I can't really do that without a lot of trouble. It's fuss and muss. Obama, though, literally just said, hey, that guy, he was giving you that trouble? Yeah, he's not going to be troubling anybody no more. And then he sort of high-fived, and then he had veal, and it was just a perfect day.
That's got to be one of the... I mean, with all of the enormous amount of stress involved in that job, that's got to be interesting to realize that you were in the position where you could just, like, go... come here and call a guy over and go, take care of that.
Yeah, that guy over there. Oh, not so much for him. Yeah. Well, there's that sequence in The American President where they're getting ready to, I don't know, I forget they use a real country. Maybe it's Iraq. But they're getting ready to bomb. They're doing some sort of military strike on some country. And Michael Douglas has that great little speech he gives because Michael J. Fox is, you know, he's talking about, you know, like, boss, you're going to get a 15-point bump out of this or whatever. And Douglas has a great speech where he says, you know, like somewhere in Iraq, he's like, there's some guy who's like a janitor at a building, and he's getting up and he's making his breakfast and he's going to work, and he has no idea that in like 2 hours he's going to get blown into tiny little bits because I decided that building should get blown up. You know, he doesn't know that 2 hours ago I decided to have him killed. It is a weird, It is a weird dynamic, and I think that's why you get guys like Nixon who just go so completely crazy, because you just figure, like, well, they've entrusted me with this power. That must mean that I'm a god, you know, and they just... It's like you hear those stories about Caligula, and his whole thing was that he would his assistants would occasionally they would go on and you know like Emperor Caligula we have your lunch you know and it, they would go on to bring him whatever, and he would just be in there having these just the grand masterful long-winded conversations with the gods because he believed that he was able to speak directly to them. And his whole rationale was, well, they wouldn't have made me emperor the whole joint if I was not also a god. So, I mean, come on. And I think that must screw with your head after a while. So, by the way, I will, Christmas is going to be coming up, you know, before you realize. So I'm going to present a list of people that I'd like killed.
Okay.
You can just pick any one of them.
What do I get?
Two if they're under 30. What?
What do I get for Christmas?
I don't know. You already got free abortions. What else do you want?
What's that? School district officials in Columbus, Ohio, say a $90,000 a year elementary school principal got her own children subsidized school lunches through a federal program for the poor. The Columbus School Board on Tuesday accepted the resignation of Kimberly N. Jones, who had been put on paid leave on April 20th. The Columbus Dispatch reports she claimed on federal forms that her job paid $2,100 a month, allowing her two children to pay 40 cents for their lunches for 2 years. A district auditor described Jones's action as possibly fraudulent, definitely unethical.
Possibly fraudulent.
School Superintendent Gene Harris told the board members that people sometimes make bad decisions if they feel personal pressure. She also said law enforcement authorities have been notified.
Okay.
Let's do entertainment news.
Let's do entertainment news. What? Yes. Here's your entertainment news for Thursday.
No Doubt drummer Adrian Young and his wife Nina are expecting a child. I didn't even know that mattered. The 41-year-old musician also has a 9-year-old son. Nina and I are thrilled to announce the upcoming birth of Mason's little sister next month, he posted on the band's official website. The three of us are over the moon excited. We cannot wait to meet her and for her to join the No Doubt family.
Is that like joining the No Limit family?
Yeah, something. Actor Jackie Cooper, who received the Oscar nod for his work in the 1931 movie Skippy, but was best known to folks our age as Clark Kent's boss in the first four Superman movies, died Tuesday at a convalescent home in Santa Monica, California. A member of the Our Gang short comedy films, Cooper also co-starred in The Champ and The Return of Frank James. Mel Gibson's ex-lover, Oksana Grigoryeva, has dropped her domestic violence allegations against him in an attempt to settle their custody battle. TMZ reports that she also terminated a restraining order she had against Gibson. He was sentenced to 3 years probation and a year of counseling in March after he pleaded no contest to a misdemeanor for simple battery. The actor's next film, The Beaver, opens in select theaters on Friday. Rules of Engagement actor David Spade donated $200,000 to the American Red Cross for tornado relief. With the devastating disasters the tornadoes and floods are causing, I wanted to help the Red Cross in their efforts to provide help as quickly as possible, he said in a statement. I also hope this will help shine a spotlight on the people of the United States who are in desperate need right now and that others will join me in donating what they can.
Is it shining a spotlight on an upcoming project from David Spade that he wants us to know about?
I don't know. Beats me.
I mean, I'm not trying to...
I don't think so. I think he just did it.
I guess the question is, like, then you wonder, well, like, why is there a press release? I guess maybe unless he is hoping that people go, if David Spade can give, then so can I.
So can I. 51-year-old entertainer Marie Osmond remarried her first husband, Stephen Craig, Wednesday in Las Vegas. The couple, who were married from 1982 to 1985, have a 28-year-old son named Stephen. Osmond was also married to music producer Brian Blosill, who she divorced in 2007.
Boy, you know, it's like that. Sometimes it's like you just think the crazy's under control. You think they've cured it. And then something happens to come along and reaffirm your faith in the fact that she is just screamingly bonkers.
Yeah.
Like in every way. All right.
Rutger Hauer, who starred in this year in the Anthony Hopkins thriller The Right, is the main attraction in the violent and pulpy indie action drama Hobo with a Shotgun.
Is he ever?
Like the man with no name from the Sergio Leone films, Hobo is a stranger who exacts his own brand of justice in a lawless town. The picture's concept originated in 2007 when director Jason Eisner and producer Rob Cotterell entered and won the Grindhouse Trailer Contest, which was co-sponsored by South by Southwest Film Festival and Robert Rodriguez. Eisner here discusses how he came up with the low-budget tricks for his movie.
See, I think I have to drop the music here. Maria.
But like, we did our best to just come up with like low-budget like tricks to like come up with effects. Like a lot of the squibs, like when people get shot. You know, if you're gonna put a squib on somebody, that's like that's gonna cost a lot of money. One for the pyro, and also you gotta upgrade that performer to a stunt performer, and that's a huge pay increase. And so we just used an old school idea of just using air pressure, like, you know, hoses, put the blood in the hose, tape it in the shirt, and then just like blow the air through the hose, which just blows the blood through the hose, and just.
I had no idea that you had to become a stunt. You were then classed as a stunt performer. I guess a squib is explosive, though.
Yeah.
So that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because there have been moments where those things have gone really wrong.
Oh, yes.
Warren Beatty had squibs all over him for Bonnie and Clyde. Apparently, some near his member, and he was, as the story was told. So they covered Beatty with squibs for Bonnie and Clyde for the shootout sequence at the end, and something happened when he shifted or he moved, and one of them fell, sort of slid down, and there were squibs that were directly over his, over the store there. And
over
when
his
one
clown
of them,
Nazi?
Exactly. It went, you know, bang, and then there was a whole lot of like, ow, my junk. You know? So, and then of course nobody's really stopping anything, because they're going, oh, what a great actor he is. Listen to him scream.
Sir Anthony Hopkins plays Odin, the father of the God of Thunder and the manipulative Loki in the new film Thor, directed by Kenneth Branagh. The picture opens nationwide tomorrow.
That was a shrug, by the way, that it was right there after the
film. I have to admit, I had no idea that Kenneth Branagh directed this.
I kind of forgot he existed.
I had no idea. During preparations for Thor, Branagh and Hopkins talked about such things as Shane and Lawman, and the themes from those flicks actually apply to the world of Asgard. Hopkins talks about the Western influences that are prevalent in Thor's narrative.
For the love of God, another guy who can't speak up. Hold on a second.
We referred in the readings beforehand. We had about a week's readings done in Manhattan Beach.
Yeah.
We talked, not extensively, but a bit about the good old Westerns, you know, Shane. One of my favorite all-time Westerns, you know, when the bad guys come in and they have a conference and they try to negotiate, and Jack Palance, you know, looks sinister and all that. And to have that sort of feeling of the father, the autocratic father, and the troublesome sons. It's a wonderful film called Lawman, which Ken and I talked about, with Burt Lancaster. Great movie about rival factions, you know, there's the father, played by Lee Jacob, and all these bad sons he's got. And there's always one son who's a little in the middle, not quite sure where he belongs. So we had those points of reference on the horse when I meet, I don't know if it's in the film, when I meet my enemy and I say, let's talk about this, we don't need any bloodshed. That was taken from an idea of a Western negotiation, you know. So I love those points of reference because I was a fan of all those early Western movies. Gary Cooper, all those guys.
You know, it's a uniquely British ability to take something exciting and thrilling and just make it sound like you're reading out of a textbook on how to, on how to determine the atomic weight of gold.
It's very strange for me whenever I hear anybody mention Manhattan Beach, because that's my hometown. And when I lived there, there was no film production when I grew up there. But then later after I moved to Oregon, I think it's actually the site of, it was a Mattel Toys manufacturing plant that was a big hunkalette. And they built all these sound stages. Now a whole lot of TV shows and movies are shot in my hometown. And it's very weird to hear Anthony Hopkins mention the name of... And then we went to a reading in Manhattan Beach. And it's like, what? Huh?
And so when would that have happened? Was that like in the... That would have been... Do they still use it now? I mean, is it...
A bunch of stuff is shot there all the time. In fact, I watched this week's episode of Castle last night. And they were actually doing some location stuff at the Manhattan Beach Pier. On the beach right there. And so I assume they probably shoot Castle, or at least some of Castle, there as well. A number of TV shows are shot there now.
So this thing that Hopkins has got coming out now, I'm so confused by this, and unfortunately we have to sort of wrap it up here, but I'm trying to figure out, are they taking the God characters and putting them in some sort of different or modern setting, or is he just attempting to make it palatable to Western audiences by comparing it to like a guy and a horse?
Well, I don't know. It's a comic book movie. It's Thor, the comic book guy.
It is that Thor?
Yes.
Okay, see, I thought it was, you know, I thought it was...
No.
Like the actual, like, Greek representation of...
No,
you know.
It's Thor, the comic book guy with his hammer.
Oh, okay, never mind then. Hey, you're listening to Legion of News, and that is ending now at the news desk. Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic Professor, Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer, Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff, Cheryl Kanakoa, The Rick Emerson Show, next hour at rickemersonshow.com. Don't forget, you can get this program later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download. Yeah, or at legionofnews.com. And for joining us, have a safe and satisfying Thursday. We will see you tomorrow following Court and Fatboy from 10 to 11 and Movie BS with Baron Snyder, 11 to noon. This is Legion of News. Good day to you, sir.